Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 379. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about verdant forests, Soviet architecture, and monuments to the Great Patriotic War as we go to Belarus. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. This episode of the Amateur Traveler is again sponsored by Viator. Viator is a great place for tours, especially day tours. You can find out all sorts of interesting day tours, although not, as it turns out, any for Belarus. But if you're doing Belarus and go to nearby Poland, there are plenty of tours there. If you would, please go through amateurtraveler.com/tours, and Amateur Traveler will get credit for your tour. Before we get into this week's episode, I do have three news stories for you. All of them interesting or good news stories this week. Boeing is making a slight change to the 737, and I found this interesting. It's a slight little winglet that comes off the wing, and it reduces the fuel cost on the 737 by 2%. That doesn't sound like a lot, but in United Airlines, that's enough to save the company $200 million per year, which I'm sure they will pass along those savings to you. Meanwhile, China's Spring Airlines is hiring new flight attendants, and they're specifically, intentionally seeking out married women with kids. What they're looking for is what they call flight aunties, as the Singapore-based airline seeks to diversify the profile of its 600-strong flight attendant workers. This is in comparison to Chinese airlines that are known to hold pageant-style competitions to choose new flight attendants, attracting younger and single flight attendants. And then speaking of interesting and awesome in this case, in his will, Aaron Collins had a simple wish to have the family leave an awesome tip for an unsuspecting server. I'm not talking about 25%. I mean $500 for an expletive deleted pizza, Collins wrote, according to his brother Seth. Shortly after he died, the family surprised a server in Lexington with just that. Seth posted a YouTube video of that server's reaction. You can see that in the link that we have in the show notes. People were so touched by this request that the family found themselves with nearly $60,000 in donations. So this isn't coming from the will. And now Seth, the brother, is traveling across the country to all 50 states to hand out $500 tips. If you want to be part, visit Aaron's Last Wish. And again, links to all three of those stories in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Velvet D'Alessandro, who's coming to us from LA and come to talk to us about Belarus. Velvet, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, Belarus is a place that is not on most people's radar. We're talking about a former Soviet Union country. You want to put it on a map for us and then tell us why you ended up in Belarus?
Sure. Belarus is very close to Poland and the Baltic states. It's on the west end of Russia. It's bordered on the west by Lithuania and Poland. To the north is Latvia. To the east of Belarus is Russia. And to the south is Ukraine.
Okay. And why did you go there?
Well, a few years ago, I went to a lot of the countries that end in Stan, Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, etc. And it just got me thinking about all the former Soviet countries, about how they're all a little bit different. They kind of all have their own little personality. And I thought it'd be interesting to check out each one little by little. So I've been to 8 and I have 7 left to go.
And I should tell people, this is actually the second time we're trying to record this because of bad internet that we ran into last time. When we last talked, we didn't talk about what ended you up in all the different stands in the first place, too.
I was looking at a map one day, and I noticed how huge Kazakhstan is. And it just got me thinking. I looked it up, and it's like the ninth biggest country in the world, area-wise. And I just started thinking, wow, what else am I missing? I mean, I just had no idea that that took up so much area and was such a large country. And then it just went downhill from there. I thought, well, I can't just go to Kazakhstan without looking at Uzbekistan or Turkmenistan. And next thing you know, I'm on this quest to visit all the former Soviet countries.
Excellent. So you have a sense of adventure. Belarus, how much of a sense of adventure do we need to go to Belarus, or is it just completely tourism ready?
Unfortunately, it's not really ready for prime time, but that's an attraction for a lot of people who are kind of tired of the crowds and the higher prices in some of the other Eastern European countries, like Czech Republic and Poland and Romania. Not that they're overly crowded, but compared to Belarus, they might be. So I think that's an attraction for some people. And I would say it's not so much a sense of adventure. It's just you have to be patient and just don't expect things to go like clockwork. If you just take a minute and realize that they're just getting their feet wet in the tourism industry, I think it's possible to have a great time there.
Can you give us an example of that?
Over there, it seems like it's really a novelty and really nice to the people who live there to interact with a Western tourist. And the people who have tried to learn English, of course, want to practice their English. Mm-hmm. I had taken a trip from one city to another on a bus. And a young lady that was on the bus, when I got off and I was trying to get oriented with my map, she didn't speak much English, but she called her friend who spoke English. And her friend said, oh, you can stay with my friend. She has an apartment here, and if you'd like to stay there, that's fine. So I wound up staying there 3 days. Just completely out of the blue.
All right. Excellent. And what would you recommend that we see? What kind of an itinerary would you recommend for Belarus?
It's important to go to Minsk because that's the capital and the largest city. Mm-hmm. Another really important city in the history of Belarus is Brest, which is near the Polish border. There were a lot of great battles fought there during World War II, which they call the Great Patriotic War. Mm-hmm. And then I would say if you could just pick one other smaller town, because you kind of get a real flavor for the lifestyle of the people when you go to the smaller towns and just see how their day-to-day life is.
Okay. And let's go back and do those a little slower than Minsk. I fly into Minsk probably or take the train in from somewhere else. What should I do?
So when you're in Minsk, one of the most important things to get an understanding of the country and their history would be the Museum of the Great Patriotic War. Mm-hmm. And even some Russian tourists that were there, some young fellows from Russia, told me you have to go there because this is such an important part of Russian and Belarusian history. It just takes a great place in their day-to-day life. To us, World War II is past and we don't really think about it. But to people from that area, it's a day that's still on their day-to-day radar. And so it's important, I think, to go to the museum and just look through the displays and see all the crisis and just all the battles that have happened there and all the history that's involved there. And that gives you a better understanding of the people of Belarus and what they've been through.
Okay. And then where after that?
I would say try to take a city tour of Minsk with an English-speaking guide, because some of the buildings to us, the Stalinist-type architectures, is remarkable and it's interesting to see. But I think it might be lost on a lot of Western tourists unless you really go with a guide and they explain the significance of some of the places within the city. And also just to get a feel for the layout of the city and how the subways are and how the buses are, and just to kind of get the lay of the land, I would say to take a city tour.
And how did you find a city tour?
I actually connected with a young man on TripAdvisor. They call those people destination experts. Okay. He is a destination expert on Belarus. His name is
in the TripAdvisor forums then.
Exactly. And he posts there all the time answering questions. So I was very happy with it. It was a 3-hour city tour. He took his own car. So we got to drive around a little bit. And he pointed out just a lot of places that are significant, like Lee Harvey Oswald lived there. He showed me the apartment where Lee Harvey Oswald lived. And they've done a lot of filming. They use Belarus in historic pieces on Russia because there's hardly any advertising and it still really looks like 50s era, 60s era Russia. So whenever they're making movies that they need that backdrop, they film a lot in Minsk.
Excellent. And we should say that your recommendation here about the destination expert is something that people should remember in general, because we've already experienced on the Amateur Traveler some of the wealth of knowledge. The two episodes that we've done that were very well received on Israel and on Jerusalem were by the destination expert from TripAdvisor on that area as well.
Yes, I'd really recommend that. I mean, there are two destination experts I ran into dealing with Belarus, and they both seemed really just selfless in their patience with answering questions over and over about just day-to-day stuff, the visas and the flights and the trains and how to book tickets. And so I really felt comfortable giving a little back by taking a city tour.
And were there a lot of things that you needed to know about visas and things like that? How big were the hoops you had to jump through?
For a Western tourist, I would say it's really important to do your homework because you do need a visa. It's not anything impossible, but it's important to be prepared. You have to have a letter of invitation from a travel company in Belarus and some hotel reservations. So it's nothing insurmountable, but you do have to kind of plan ahead. And
it's not one you're going to get at the airport.
Exactly.
Okay. Interesting. That's interesting. You need a letter because that's the old Soviet system. It sounds like they just haven't changed the rules yet.
Yes, and also similar to the old Soviet system you mentioned in Russia, you have to register with the local tourist authority if you're going to be there more than 5 days. So that's important because I've heard a lot of stories. If you fail to do that, it can cause a lot of problems and you can get fined when you go to leave. So be sure and check with your hotel or the hostel where you stay and make sure that that's either being done on your behalf or that they let you know how to do that.
Oh, so it's something you do when you're there. Okay. Got it.
Yeah, the larger hotels will do it for you, but if you're staying at a hostel, and actually this was a very interesting morning I had, they physically went with me to the office and waited on me while I filled out the paperwork. So to some people, it might be a little bit of unnecessary bureaucracy, but I really thought it was interesting, and I thought it was nice that the hostel people were willing to go with me and take me through it.
And with that kind of service, you have to tell us what hostel you stayed at.
I stayed at Hostel Viva in Minsk. It's one of the few. There really aren't a lot of hostels yet in the whole country. There's just a handful. And they were very nice and very professional with everything. I made reservations in advance. They were willing to assist with getting the letter so that the visa was taken care of, and I would recommend them.
Now, as I recall from the first time we tried to do this interview, they also got you from the airport.
Yes, they arranged an airport transfer. And if you're flying in, I would also recommend that because it didn't seem any more expensive than just taking a taxi, but it was really nice. It's a long travel day from the U.S. It's about at least 16 hours and a few changes of plane to get there. So,
and the airport's a little out of town, you said?
Yes, it's a little ways out of town, about 40 minutes. So it was nice to have someone waiting for you, and they can take you right to the hostel so you don't have to immediately navigate the public transportation system.
Excellent. Let's go back to Minsk then. What else should we see while we're there, or what else should we do?
I would say if there's some way that you can interact with the local people, I did it through couchsurfing. There was a couchsurfing meetup group that happened to be meeting during the time I was there. And that was a great experience.
So you weren't sleeping on someone's couch, but you were taking advantage of the socializing part of couchsurfing.
Exactly. Exactly. They have a lot of just meetup events, and I met people from America that were there teaching English, but also a lot of local people that just wanted a change of pace and wanted to meet tourists, and they were more than willing to help you with anything, any questions you had, or they just seemed really happy to meet Western tourists.
Excellent. Did you get any tips while meeting with the locals that you would have otherwise gone without?
I don't know if you would call it tips, but almost every local was willing to give me a note to help me get to my my next destination, a note that I could take to the bus station or the train station, or if you get lost. That seemed to be a very common practice, and nobody would let me leave without a note so that they would feel safe that I'm going to make it to the next place without any incidents. So it was very nice.
So that leads us into language. So you don't speak, I want to say Russian is the language of Belarus. There is no Belarusian, as I recall.
There is a language of Belarusian very similar to Russian, but during the day-to-day activities, everyone speaks Russian and all the signs. To us, not speaking the language, I don't know if we would even know the difference, you know, to see a sign. The alphabet seems almost the same. And
the Cyrillic, okay.
Very similar, yeah. So if there's any way before the trip that you could at least get familiar with the alphabet, if not learn a few words, it would really help things. The alphabet's pretty much phonetic, so
if you know how to pronounce it.
Exactly. You'll at least know that you're on the right bus or that you can look at a map and figure out, okay, am I on at least on the right street? It's very helpful, even just that much, to just learn the alphabet and how to pronounce, sound out the words.
And anybody who's had an exposure to Greek, a few of those weirder letters are actually Greek letters that were imported by St. Cyril to do the Cyrillic alphabet.
Yeah, the pronunciations, they don't seem that difficult. Everything pretty much follows a pattern. I'd say just maybe make up some flashcards a few weeks before you go, and it'll really help your experience there.
Excellent. Anything else you did or saw in Minsk?
Yes, one thing I would really recommend, I'm not sure if everyone's thrilled with biking around the city, but I rented a bicycle, and they have little stalls. There's a river with some green space that runs through the town, kind of meanders through Minsk. And I'm probably butchering this pronunciation, but let's call it Svislich River. And there's a stalls to rent bicycles, and that was a really good day. I rented a bike, and they have a little bike trail. It's not crowded at all. It crosses some of the major streets. So if you're on the trail and you want to ride on the street and see a few sights, you can hop on, hop off, and then eventually it makes a loop, and you're back where you rented the bicycle, and you can return it.
Excellent. Anything else we should talk about with Minsk before we move on to Brest?
In general, I just wanted to mention one thing about the money. Mm-hmm. The money took a little getting used to because they're in very large denominations, 8,700 Belarusian rubles to the dollar. So
okay.
Take a calculator and just kind of pay attention. Many times I had to have the people at the store help me out because you wind up with this handfuls of money of large denominations. So, and also, if you're going to exchange U.S. dollars, they have to be in pristine condition, like they just were printed yesterday. Any little fold, crease, mark, or anything, and they're going to get handed back to you. So be sure and take a look at those before you leave. And it's not difficult to change money. There's plenty of places, but they're very picky about what they'll accept.
Interesting. And you did that rather than ATM?
Yes, I didn't feel comfortable. Some people do, but I was only going for a couple weeks, so I just didn't want to risk having my card get eaten.
Okay.
And I do think it's possible, but personally, I didn't choose that route.
Okay. And then you went to Brest.
Yes. After Minsk, I took a train to the city of Brest. It was about 3.5 hours. And it was really nice. The train, it looked like it had just been refurbished. It was super clean, but it did look like maybe a 70s era train car. But it was very interesting. And I was surprised at how being in some other Eastern European rail cars, it was a very pleasant surprise, and it looked like they just repainted it and redid all the upholstery and everything. So that was a very good experience. And then in Brest, it's difficult. Once you get out of Minsk, there are a few problems with finding accommodation that's reasonable. Like I said, hostels aren't really that common, and budget hotels that are geared toward Western tourists are really almost non-existent. So I would suggest if you're happy with the place you stay in Minsk or your city before Brest, ask them for a recommendation because they can call ahead and get you a room. I wound up staying actually at a hotel geared toward Russian tourists, and they didn't speak much English at all, but they were very friendly and just very willing to work with me and try to, through sign language and diagrams on paper, to get me a room. And it turned out being fine, but it's something you might want to plan ahead or get some recommendations before you go.
And why did you end up in Brest? I mean, you're way over on the Polish border.
Yeah, it's a very significant town. The Battle of Brest was very significant in World War II, where the Nazis invaded, and there's a lot of like Soviet monuments. Brest Fortress is kind of the highlight of the town, and that was the site of the big battle where the soldiers from Belarus fought off the Nazis until all the water was gone, all the food was gone. I think the Nazis eventually did invade, but it's a very important town in the Great Patriotic War.
So you saw monuments there. What else did you see in Brest?
There's a museum called the Museum of Confiscated Art. And it's interesting because it's artwork that, I guess, according to who you ask, that people were trying to smuggle across the border into Poland, and it was confiscated there. And there was so much of it that they didn't know what to do after it had been confiscated, but they couldn't let it leave the country. So they wound up just making a small museum there. And I thought that was interesting.
This is from the Soviet era?
No, it's all types of antiquities and artwork. And I think they still add to it today if a person's unlucky enough to be trying to smuggle artwork out of Belarus and you get caught. That's where the artwork winds up.
Okay, that's certainly one way to fill a museum, but
like I said, it depends. I didn't get to hear the other side of the story about how a lot of the stuff wound up there, but I'm just going with what was on the museum brochure.
Excellent. Anything else in Brest?
There's a side trip out of Brest that a lot of people recommend. I didn't have time for it, but there's a lot of Belarus is green space and natural vegetation. I believe like 70% is forests and other natural green space. So there's a national forest there that's actually a UNESCO World Heritage Site. And you can take 1, 2, 3 day trips there. I believe it's pronounced Belovezhskaya National Forest. And so there were opportunities if someone wanted to take a trip out there, maybe stay for a night or two in a cabin. That was highly recommended, although I didn't have time personally to check it out.
Excellent. And then you mentioned you also went to a small town.
Yes, I went to the small town of Grodno, which is near the intersection of Poland, Lithuania, and Belarus. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the small towns I was talking about. Some people also go to Vitebsk. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, which is the home of Marc Chagall. But I chose Grodno because my next stop was Lithuania. So it's pretty close to the border, and I thought that would be a good place to spend a few days. And that's actually where I met the young lady that invited me to stay at her apartment for a few days at the bus stop. And it's a very charming little town. It was spared a lot of the bombing and the other bad activities that happened during the battles of World War II. So it's still very picturesque and very clean. All of Belarus is very clean, but very friendly people. It was a nice few days there.
Excellent. What surprised you about Belarus?
I think one thing was just how clean it was. I don't know what I was expecting, but it was super clean as far as litter goes. Very, very little litter, graffiti, anything like that. It seems like, I don't know if the people, I'm sure they take a certain amount of pride in their towns, but maybe they just have enough of a workforce that can come through and clean everything, because I just didn't see anything out of the ordinary. Some of the buildings were old, but everything is just super clean and just a lot of open space. Some places you go, even though they may have some benches and green space and places that you could sit down and take a break, everything's either graffitied or already taken up, but there was just plenty of places to relax, sit down, enjoy the day.
Okay. Now, did you consult any guidebooks?
Yes.
Did they recommend anything that you would recommend against?
It's not that I think it's a waste of time, but one of the attractions near Minsk is called Mount of Glory, and mm-hmm. it's a gigantic war monument about halfway to the airport. And I don't think they put enough emphasis on like how far out of town it was. I really wanted to see it, so I showed a picture of it to the hosts at the hostel, and they told me like what bus to take to get out there. And I was successful, but it's quite a ways out of town, and so you may not get that from the description that you have to. The best thing I would say is go with someone who has a car, because even if you take a bus, it doesn't stop right there. And I had a lot of walking around until I finally, you could see it, but you just can't get to it. And I think also the guidebook I used was the Brat Guide by Nigel Roberts. And I believe it's the only like standalone guide to Belarus that I found, at least. There are chapters in other Eastern Europe guides, but I had that one. I'm under the impression he speaks Russian, or at least somewhat. And I don't think it was evident to him, the language barrier, how much of a problem it can be if you don't speak any Russian. So
got it.
I would recommend they maybe on their next edition, if they could just emphasize that more, that it's going to be a challenge.
Now, it might sound odd to some of us in the West here, seeing all the monuments to World War II, but I think many people know that the amount of loss of life for the Soviet Union was just phenomenal. I mean, we talk about the loss of life of Americans, and obviously it didn't happen on our doorstep. It didn't happen on our land. So we lost like 400,000 people, all mostly not civilians, mostly in the military. And they lost, I just looked it up, and it's somewhere between 22 million and 30 million. And they really don't know. I mean, that's an 8 million range there, but it's just tremendous loss of life.
Yeah, I've heard figures like Belarus lost a third of its population. Just ridiculous numbers that you're right. We don't, it's hard for us to fathom that much carnage.
Okay. What was the best day you had?
Taking the bike tour around Minsk was really mm-hmm. a great day, just to be able to go around at a slow pace, but cover a lot of ground. That's one thing I liked about being on the bicycle. And it was a beautiful day. It was really hot while I was there. I was surprised. I went in May, and I thought it'd be maybe in the 60s and 70s, and it was well into the 80s. So The weather was beautiful, and just to be able to meander, the river is very picturesque, and families are out. It was just a really nice, relaxing day.
You talked about it being a very green area. What was the prettiest spot that you were at?
Well, in the little town of Grodna, they have like a little stream that runs through a park in the center of the city, and that was very picturesque. But another custom I found in that part of the world, and I don't know if you've had other guests talk about it, but when you have a wedding party, they'll go to like a local bridge, and then they put a lock on the bridge.
Love locks.
Yeah. So there's a very picturesque little bridge in that park with a bunch of padlocks on it. And just seeing that and the green space, nice blue sky, it was a beautiful, beautiful experience.
Excellent. Anything particular to eat or drink that's typical of Belarus?
Actually, I'm a vegetarian, so the food, Belarus is not the best country for a vegetarian. But I can tell you about a drink that's common to that part of the world called kvass. I guess it'd be K-V-A-S-S. And it's popular in Russia in the summer. It's very popular. And in Belarus. And I would recommend people at least try it. It may not be to everyone's liking.
Now, that's the one that's made from bread?
Yes.
Which is hard to picture until you've had some, but...
Right. Yes, it's got a very malty, yeasty flavor, and I think if you're gluten-free in your diet, it wouldn't be good for you. But it's worth a try just to get an idea of what it's like.
Our Russian teacher, when my wife and I took Russian for a while, brought in some to sample.
Yeah, I brought some here in Los Angeles. There's a large expat Russian community, and I went to one of the markets and got some so my friends could try it. And we were reading the ingredients. We decided it's like liquid bread.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Excellent. And did you have any chance to touch base with some of the culture or the sport or the art in Belarus?
Not really, other than when I stayed at the apartment of my friend from Grodna, I was really surprised by just how nice it was. From the outside, it looked like one of the blocky Soviet-style apartment buildings, a little bit run down. But on the inside, it was beautiful. Stainless steel appliances, hardwood floors. Anyone would be proud to live in a place like that. And I thought that was really interesting. And other than that, there was a lot of hockey going on when I was there. And at the hostel, there was quite a crowd in the evenings watching the hockey finals.
Excellent. Last three questions. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Belarus.
Oh, I can tell you that I was there in May and I told you it was really hot. The mosquitoes and the biting flies were just ridiculous, especially in Brest. I don't know if they got radiated from Chernobyl or they're genetically modified, but man, they were just relentless. So one thing that makes me laugh is when the mosquitoes and the biting insects are so powerful that you're going from store to store acting out the buzzing sound and the activities of a mosquito, like just to find some strong bug spray. That's classic Belarus. I finally found something at a pharmacy, like behind the counter. I called it Agent Orange because it's in an orange canister. And the stuff I had from L.A. just didn't, they were laughing at that, the off or whatever. That didn't do the trick.
No, I think you'd need something that they have in, say, Wisconsin or Minnesota rather than L.A. You
know? Exactly. Yeah, the combination sunscreen, we'll keep the bugs away. That's not going to do it.
Finish this sentence. You really know you're in Belarus when what?
You know you're in Belarus when you're staying in one of the few hostels in the country and your fellow guests include Russian teenagers, a group of middle-aged business women traveling together to a conference, and a couple of long-distance truck drivers. Because of the lack of reasonable accommodation, the hostels get all kinds.
Interesting. And not a lot of international people then?
Not a lot of Western tourists. A lot of Russian tourists, okay, because they have an open border with Russian, but it's a little bit unusual to see Western tourists there.
Interesting. Well, excellent. Velvet, thanks so much for coming on the show and telling us about your travels in Belarus. And as I recall, you don't have a travel blog that we can send people to.
No, I just keep it all in my head.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for coming on The Amateur Traveler.
Okay, thank you for having me.
I heard recently from Allison in the Facebook community, facebook.com/amateurtraveler, which you are, of course, also welcome to join, who said, "I just discovered your podcasts and I love it. I just got back from a Southern Caribbean cruise in May and wish that I had found your site sooner. I used a guidebook, but think your podcasts have much more relevant information, especially about the non-touristy things to do in various countries. Nevertheless, I have been listening to some of your older episodes and now I'm starting to brainstorm my next trip. There are so many destinations that I hadn't considered before, especially in the U.S., but now I can't wait to pick up destination and start planning. Allison, excellent. That is just exactly how I hope people will use this show. I should mention that a couple weeks back, when we celebrated the 8th year anniversary of Amateur Travel, I did hear from some people, including Lisa, who said, congratulations on your 8-year anniversary. I've enjoyed listening to the podcast for the past 8 years and hope to continue for many more. I know that it is a lot of work and wanted to let you know that it is appreciated. Thanks for all you do. And Lisa, thanks so much. And I am curious how many of you actually have been with us for most of those 8 years. I know that first episode was probably only heard by me, at least at the time that it came out. But if anybody else has really been around for about 8 years now, I thank you and I applaud you so much for your support. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. Remember, if you want to book a Viator, amateurtraveler.com/tours. If you have a question, send it to host@amateurtraveler.com or leave it on the Facebook community or as a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.